Vancouver, here in Portland. If you'd like to get involved, you'd like to be a donor, please contact Charletta Malone. Her number is 503-528-5582. We'll remind our listeners next month. Again, that's on June 20th. The goal is we want 200 donors. And Deborah, if you could sign us off, please.
In closing, we would like to invoke the powerful words of author Ralph Ellison and his description in his novel, Juneteenth. We remember the shining promise of emancipation, along with the bloody path America took by delaying it and deferring fulfillment of those simple, unanticipating words in General Granger's original order number 3, that this involves an absolute equality of personal rights and rights of property between former masters and slaves.
And with that, brothers and sisters, we want to say holla. Thank you for joining us.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 3rd Annual Surf Riders Soiree, Thursday, May 7th at the Holocene in Portland. The fundraiser will include an art show, silent auction, raffle, DJ, and screening of 2 surf films, North of the Sun and The Fortune Wild. Proceeds will benefit the Portland chapter of Surf Riders Clean Water Campaign. Again, that's the 3rd Annual Surf Riders Soiree, Thursday, May 7th, 6 to 11 p.m. at the Holocene. 1001 Southeast Morrison in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad.
Billy Rose was a low rider. Billy Rose was a night fighter. Billy Rose knew trouble like the sound of his own name. Busted on a drunken charge, driving someone else's car. The local midnight sheriff's claim to fame. In an Arizona jail, there is some who tell the tale. A Billy fought the sergeant for some milk that he demanded. Knowing they'd remain the boss, knowing he would pay the cost, they saw he was severely reprimanded. Take me home. Come and lay, help us lay.
Good evening, folks. This is Ruth Kovach. KBOO is bringing you Prison Pipeline. And with me tonight is my guest, Justin Woodruff. We'll be talking to you for a few minutes about all sorts of things. Justin is one of those been there, done that guys and has lots to say. He manages to remain very humble, even though he's quite a contributor to the folks who are in transition. He helps them in as many ways as he can, but he talks about them more than he does about himself. So I have to take this opportunity to tell you that he is one heck of a guy who has been there, done that, went through all the steps, did the crime, paid the price, came out, saw his mistake, and is paying back to the community. Hello, Justin. How are you?
I'm good, Ruth. Thank you for that wonderful introduction.
Oh, well, I knew you wouldn't say it because humility is one of your virtues. Thank you. So, tell me, how much time did you serve?
Well, there are two different occasions where I was actually incarcerated. There was a period of time when I was incarcerated in state custody for approximately about 5 years. And then the most recent was close to 6 years in federal custody.
So you've been done the time, and how come you had to go twice? Didn't you learn anything the first time? What's going on there?
I don't think I did. I just wasn't ready. And, you know, really in my world, that's what it came down to, was it came to a point where I had decided that I had enough. And
I think today we're going to talk a little bit about recidivism, and it's very common. It's not as if whatever we do, we do it so well that they just never come back again. It doesn't work like that. There's a lot of repeat offenders. Sometimes they take up a new line of offense, but they still keep coming back. And now you're enrolled at PCC in a program. What's that about?
Yeah, PCC offers a program for addiction studies degrees, and I'm pursuing my CADC1, which is an alcohol and drug counseling certification. And I'm actually currently working in practicum right now as an addictions counselor.
Are you a recovered drug or alcohol addict?
I'm in recovery. My recovery primarily stems from criminality, which can be just as dangerous in someone's life.
Mm-hmm. Well, how about that? I understand that you're one of those humble people, and it's so good to know you. You're been very active and been helped by Harry Olson and the Phoenix Rising Transitions programs. You're grateful to them, but they are grateful to you because you do that a lot for their program now. And instead of talking about how wonderful you are, you told me you had some data you thought would be of interest to our listeners. So I'll let you have the mic, and you can just rattle off your data, and I'm sure I'll be interested too.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah, my involvement, and just to explain to the listeners, my involvement with Phoenix Rising Transitions is I am a certified recovery mentor with the program. I also facilitate a class at the Columbia River Correctional Institution in Portland on Fridays, helping individuals to establish a reentry plan, as I like to call it, a transition plan, but most people are familiar with the term reentry. And for the purposes of this conversation, we'll switch that to transitioning, if that's okay with you.
That's good for me.
Okay, good. And so what I really wanted to talk about was the transitioning period and the easement of that transition period due to many factors out there. Community supervision has a vested interest in the individuals being successful in their transition. And it's been very evident, along with Department of Corrections as well, and the Federal Bureau of Prisons. So there's definitely a shift in assisting individuals to have a successful transition period into the community, which is a beautiful thing. Some of the statistics I've got here today just outline the population, the incarcerated population. And
let's hear it.
This data, Oregonians sentenced for felony convictions and released from jail or prison in 2005 and 2006, which is our most up-to-date statistics, were evaluated at that time for revocation risk. Those released from jail, from prison, and those who served through interstate compact were considered in the analysis. And the revocation rate is the lowest it's been in a long time. 24% is actually a very decent rate.
So what does that mean? 24% of those who were in transition
were revoked under their community supervision and sent back for the remainder of their incarceration.
We use the word recidivism a lot to describe that.
Right? Yes, yeah.
So that's all one bundle of what goes on as they get out and they come back.
Yes, they do. Yeah, and a lot of that, you know, while it's not ideal to look at external factors and blame other things, a lot of that does reside within and comes down to the true desire to have a successful transition and making those steps. And some of those steps aren't exactly easy to make, but...
Okay, so now that we've explained that term a little, what percentage go back?
24% as of 2005 and 2006. Uh-huh. There's... between 30 and 35,000 individuals in the state of Oregon who are currently under community supervision, which when you put those numbers into play, that seems like a pretty good percentage of our population.
34,000.
30 to 35,000.
When you say supervision, you mean they're in lockdown?
No, that means they're supervised by community corrections. That means they've either been to jail or to prison and are out on either post-prison or probation.
So folks know the term parole officers are keeping in touch with them.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Ideally, they're able to sustain their own transition period without too much help from community corrections. But that's where that comes into play. And that is that's a pretty significant portion of our population in the state. When you consider the resources that are available to these individuals, prior to this change, the shift in the paradigm, the recidivism rate was much higher. Mm-hmm. Now that these programs are in play, we're seeing individuals not only more successful, but we're seeing the recidivism rate dramatically being lowered due to these programs and these resources being available to individuals.
Well, how about the other things that are necessary for a good transition, such as availability of employment, availability of housing, community attitudes, cost of living, family support, and so on? Are those things improving proportionately?
I would say yes, and I would feel confident in making that statement. Not only the resources that are available, but I think that starts with education. And I think the community has become aware that these individuals will be transitioning back into the community, into their community, and we all live in the same community. So assisting and providing resources assures that your community will only enhance. Mm-hmm. We keep sending people back to prison, and that's no good for anybody.
Well, you're very well informed and you use all the right words, but I know a lot of our listeners, they just sort of think it's a bunch of numbers. But bottom line is, if you have school-age children and they're in school, you think some of their classmates have parents in prison?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's a very fair assessment, with the statistic being 1 in 3 individuals now have an arrest record as well. That's very significant. We're talking 1/3 of the population in the United States of America have an arrest record. So I think that's a very...
And what's the vulnerable age to be arrested?
The vulnerable age to be arrested, as an adult, is between the ages of 18 and 20. Uh-huh. That's such a young period in your life.
I thought those were kids, too. Oh, they're supposed to be all grown up and adults. I see. Okay.
Yeah, according to society standards, that's the case. Yeah. Yeah, that is the case.
It's okay to acknowledge that they're just kids. And on the other hand, saying they're just kids does not excuse it. We have to, that's the time to correct their behavior and put them in a program that's not just lockdown, not punishment, but something that will actually release them eventually better for having had that experience of being held down.
Absolutely.
And do you think that's going on the way it should, or is there a need for more rehab programs?
Oh, absolutely. There's always a need for more rehab and rehabilitative programming. The problem that we're faced with today in this day and age is the access to the resources, is the information of resource. And as we are living in the information age, you wouldn't think that would be the case. However, as a mentor who's in the field and involved and have my feet to the ground every day, there's something I learn that's new every day. There's a new resource that's identified daily. Mm-hmm. But there is a need. We have to continue to push for these resources.
Well, you know, whether it's the things we're talking about or a simple thing like finding a job or buying a car or finding an apartment, if you don't know how to go to a computer and push the right keys and get these lists that are meaningful to you in the area where you are at the cost you can afford, it's just overwhelming. And so the education that the education that has to go on to assist folks in doing the research that's necessary to get themselves into an appropriate program, to get themselves appropriate help and assistance. But my favorite word, their appropriate education. It's not easy, and that's one of the things Prison Pipeline tries to do. But it's not a favorite subject with people.
No, it's not. It's one of those uncomfortable subjects. We could call it the elephant in the room, if you like. But again, I think a vested interest from community members is essential, because this is our community. And whether or not you look at them as just numbers or statistics or say it doesn't affect or impact me, the more research you do on the subject, you will see the more impact it has on our local economy, on the job market, on your average everyday living costs are associated with incarceration.
I have trouble with people who don't believe in change. Once a criminal, always a criminal. Once a thief, always a thief. Once a murderer, always a murderer, and so on. And I say, just think about that a minute. If that were true, every person that has ever been incarcerated for a real serious felon, such as not just being a thief, but a murder perhaps, or so on, they'd still be out there doing it. And they're not.
Well, we have we go back to education. There is a common denominator here with the majority of individuals who are incarcerated. There's always the exception to the rule, but the majority lack proper education or access to proper resources. And we're talking about the young age of being a child. Mm-hmm. When you see your parents consistently struggling, if your parents are even involved in your life, it can be very disheartening. And you turn to those resources that are readily available to you. And some of those resources, as you and I both know, are not necessarily appropriate to having a positive and productive life.
Mm-hmm. Now, when I say to you, who should we educate? The answer is everybody.
Absolutely.
The potential person who is going to make a mistake, the parents who are supposed to guide them, the counselors and resource people who are supposed to help them transition and get back to a better life. And so there isn't any reason for every single person not listening today, every person on the street, every person that picks up a computer or a newspaper should be aware that out there are people who need not just help, not money, not time, not handshakes, but some sort of compassion and understanding and opportunity. And I don't think that... we have enough folks. Of course, I love so many people. I hope you know I'm not talking about you, but there are still a lot out there who have these basic attitudes of once a thief, always a thief, and that you can't change. If we didn't believe in change, I'd like to know how come we have so much divorce? We change our mind about who we're married to. How come we have people changing their religion? How come we have people moving from state to state, changing careers, going to college and starting over at 30 or 40 or 50 years old and so on, you know?
Exactly. That's a good point. And individuals engage in change when they're ready for it.
Mm-hmm.
But providing proper resources and the education to give an individual an informed basis for making the decision on where they choose to proceed forward in their life and what ventures and what avenues they choose to take is very important. If you are only offered A, B, and C, you'll never know that the rest even exists.
That's true.
So we work diligently to provide these resources and to educate, and that goes all across levels. It goes legislation to the government, to Department of Corrections, all the way down to the adults in custody, to the individual, to their families. If we work together collectively to identify these resources to ensure they're based on an individual basis and not just what parole or probation thinks is conducive to successful transitioning, but actually listening to the individual and identifying their needs and approaching their needs with the compassion that you spoke of. Compassion and empathy are essential. They're cornerstone to assisting an individual and serving our community.
Well, oftentimes a young person in particular will be very restless and discontent, and they know, and they tell others, and they cry about it, that their life isn't right, nothing is any good, and the life isn't worth living, and we don't like this, and we don't like that. But they don't know where to turn, so they listen to whoever reaches out to them. And if it's the drug dealer on the corner, they're pretty easy to reach.
Yeah. And, it all, like I said, it all comes down to what you want. You have to have the desire to make the change and reach out and identify the resources that you feel you're going to need. And in my role as a mentor, I cherish the individual who is engaged in that process. It's reaffirming for everything I do to see that change and that transformation begin to take place from within the individual, and not because of any external resource or because of anything I'm saying, but because they have a true innate desire to want to make that change.
Well, one of my favorite things about the many prisoners I meet is they have actually sat down and thought about where have they been and where are they going and what are they doing and why are they doing it. And I think of the people in the Dick and Jane books. Dick and Jane and their mother and father, they never had to think about it. They just got up and they got their little red wagon and their dog named Spot, and they got their job, and they put on their white shirt and tie and suit, and they went to work every day, and they never had a problem. Well, you know, I'm happy for them, but they don't have a clue.
They don't.
They don't have a clue of what they should be doing to reach out to those who weren't as lucky as they are.
Yeah. And that goes back again to education, and I'll keep using that word because it is important. If we do not begin to educate, then there's no awareness, and without the awareness, there can be no change. You know, and that's why working diligently with the Department of Corrections and with the Federal Bureau of Prisons to help them understand some of these needs of the individual transitioning back into the community is important. And I would say a good portion of my time, probably half the time, is spent actually working on educating these administrations and these bureaucracies and these policies and engaging them to understand that without the change, we will continue.
Well, Phoenix Rising Transition, and I can't mention them without mentioning Harry Olson, their fine leader and founder, has done a lot. Tell us a little bit about their program and their work and what you know about them.
Absolutely. Harry Olson is just a phenomenal individual on so many levels, and just the amount of passion and dedication he has put into the work he's done is nothing short of inspiring. I met Harry through school. I was asked to reach out and introduce myself to him with no expectation. I sat down with Harry and I told him that I'm a mentor and that I would be interested in potentially working through his program. And Phoenix Rising Transitions has a completely different approach to transitioning than anything else out there. Actually establishing contact with the individual while they're still in custody to help them work through identifying their needs. And that is so essential. You know, you spoke about being overwhelmed. When you are released from custody and you are told you must go to NA, you must go to 12-step, 90 meetings in 90 days, then you must find a job, then you must take care of your children, then you must pay child support, you're extremely overwhelmed, and
how about all the things you must not do?
There's a long list there, but right. What's missing is, you know, what do you need? That question is missing, and I'm starting to see the change toward working with the individuals, and that's something that Phoenix Rising Transitions, it's their cornerstone. It's about relationships, and when we have these relationships, there is something there, you know. And my role as an addictions counselor, I often ask my clients, you know, what goes away when you use? There's always an answer for that. Whether it's the pain, whether it's the trauma, there's something that goes away. When we have relationships and we're communicating in those relationships, we can begin to work through some of those underlying issues. And then the substance use isn't necessarily needed. There's nothing to hide from because we're exploring these emotions. Mm-hmm. We're exploring these processes. And it's a beautiful thing. And that is the cornerstone, the foundation of Phoenix. And that's, I had an opportunity with a few other agencies to become a mentor. And I saw the same cookie cutter. We are going to get out. We're going to get some money for them. We're going to throw them in 4 beds in an apartment and we will send them to the groups and we won't ask them what they need, but we'll get money for it, and we're fine with that. Didn't sit well with me, and because there's no change in that. And Phoenix is definitely a different model, and I am extremely fortunate to have an opportunity to work alongside Mr. Harry Olson.
Though we praise him because you and I have both worked with him for years now, actually. But there's others that are also doing a good job. We won't say he's the only one, but I do want to point out that there are many organizations that have very fancy titles and big board of directors and a big budget, and they give you all kinds of statistics of how many great things they've done. And we have witnessed people that have gone to those organizations and given it their best shot and didn't make the changes they needed to make, but through organizations like Phoenix and the others that are just as good, and there are a few I certainly don't want to overlook that. It makes all the difference in the world. So it's not just getting help, it's getting the right help.
It is, and it's the help according to the individual. And, you know, Phoenix is partnered with OHSU, working with them to help them develop some cultural competency for their healthcare providers, educating healthcare providers on how to communicate with individuals from my culture as I will mm-hmm. identify, and that being the prison culture. And also helping offenders such as myself be able to communicate with their healthcare providers in a proficient manner to make sure they're receiving the healthcare they need. So that's just one angle. We have several community partners. Mercy Corps is another community partner, and they're fantastic. They're a great resource. Impact Northwest, there are several agencies out there, you're absolutely correct, that we are also partnered with, and several that we're not partnered with. And that's the change I'm seeing, is these agencies are recognizing that there is a need for more than just putting people in an apartment. There's more than just finding them the minimum wage job that they're not satisfied with, that they're going to turn around and quit, finding self-worth. Mm-hmm.
Or maybe get fired from just because they're incompetent. They're given a job that they don't belong in.
Or they just have no desire to do, right. And that's, I know there's a lot of anxiety. And for those of you listening who are incarcerated at this time, there are opportunities. And to help ease some of that anxiety around your transition, there's employers are becoming aware that there is a value in hiring offenders, people with challenged backgrounds.
And this is open to all ages, all races.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. Yeah.
I don't say they won't help me because I'm this or I'm that. It's out there.
It is out there. And that's the change. And that is the message that I really want to send today, is that there is a change going on. I met with a probation officer. I've met with several over the last few months, but I met with one in particular recently with one of my mentees, and she had stated, I'm not law enforcement. I'm an agent of change. And just to hear that, it actually brought a tear to my eye, because
that's beautiful. Yes.
There's passion out there, and there's compassion, mm-hmm. and in this field, doing what we do, it's very emotionally trying. It's very emotionally challenging. And for the individual who's actually going through the process, we may think we understand what they're going through, but we're not them. So to see these agents of change out there actually engaged in initiating assistance and serving the community is just a beautiful thing. And so that's the message I really want to send out, is hopefully it eases some of those anxieties around, for those individuals who are getting ready to transition back into the community, is there are resources here, and there's an acknowledgement, and there's an awareness around the need, and there's a desire to actually mm-hmm. assist these individuals to better these communities.
Yes, and I don't want to leave this without mentioning that not just organizations, but family, parents, friends, children, daughter, reuniting and renewing these relationships is so helpful. A man alone with absolutely no one but the organizations and the system to help him doesn't have near the advantages that a man who has the support of family and friends and we've talked already, and I say it every time I'm on this program, that we can change. And for wives and children and parents to accept folks who have served time as a new person that wants to make a change and can make a change, and you have to give them a chance. And you don't just sit back and dare them to do better. You help them and support them. And so my outreach is always to the people who are listening that think, well, it's not my problem, it's his or her problem. No, it's your problem to help this person. That's what love is about. That's so corny to say that's what love is about, is to be there to support and help someone who needs it when they go through these transitions.
Absolutely. And I want to make note of the appreciation we have for you for your involvement with Phoenix as well. For those of you that know Ruth, she does accompany the Phoenix program into the prison, and she has so much to offer. And there is such a need for this, for community members such as yourself, who've never been incarcerated, who have a true desire to serve your community. It is such a beautiful thing, and we see that, and we appreciate you.
Well, that's very sweet of you to say, but I go for myself, because we have what we call relational meetings, and often a person who is a visitor is paired up with a person who's still incarcerated, and you talk about some subject, and I always learn something about myself. And I think that whatever I am, a good person or a bad person, one of the things that keeps me aware of the value of having good morals and values is listening to other people and say, I look at them and I say, oh, maybe I do that. Maybe I don't do that. Examining yourself. And I think that there isn't anyone listening to this program that couldn't spend the 5 minutes after we hang up and say to yourself, what could I do to make myself a better person?
Absolutely.
And that's what we're about.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I would like to touch on the opportunity. I talked about easing the anxieties because of some of these changes that are out there. As myself, as a recovery mentor, I just wanted to make note for those who are out there listening. There are opportunities for you as an incarcerated individual to become a mentor in the future and work with other individuals to assist them in their transition period as well. We have a recovery mentor training coming up that actually starts on May 23rd. And if it's okay, I would like to give out an email address for contact.
Certainly.
Okay. The email would be jchristensen24@comcast.net, and that's jchristensen24@comcast.net, or harryrobertolson@frontier.com. And the CRM training begins on May 23rd and wraps up, I believe it is, on June 13th, and that is an opportunity.
Those are weekly meetings?
That is a training for a 40-hour training to become a certified recovery mentor.
Okay.
Yeah, which is a wonderful opportunity for individuals with challenged backgrounds. It's not just a career. It's a career with opportunity for advancement.
Well, I'm sorry to have to leave you all, folks, but I don't want to leave without saying thank you, Justin. There is nothing like getting it from someone who's been there and done that. People who have read a lot of books and think they have a lot of knowledge, just walk in my shoes and then tell me what I should do, because that's important. And that's what you've done. You've walked in their shoes. So thank you. And thank you to Harry Olson and many other organizations and folks who are helpful in these successful transitions. And thank you to Kay Boo for having a program like Prison Pipeline be a part of their agenda. So to all of you, thanks for listening, and till next time, goodbye.
Billy Rose was a lowrider. Billy Rose was a night fighter. Billy Rose knew trouble like the sound of his own name.